Thank you for downloading the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget, you can get these shows with the ads and plugs and commercials all edited out on our special VIP audio feed with a VIP membership. That applies to all four shows that I host during the week, the Wade Keller Post Shows and podcasts later in the week, and also all seven PW Torch live casts, plus all of our VIP exclusive shows throughout the month. There's about 100 of them. I host about 12 per week that are VIP exclusive. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, post pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, and the Fix with Todd Martin. We got a bunch of other great content. Check out full details at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Yes, all the VIP podcasts, including the ad-free versions of this show, are compatible with popular podcast apps on both iPhone and Android. You can also stream the shows right from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. So check out details if you want to support us and get these shows ad-free and a ton of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com for more details. We've got a mobile-friendly sign-up form. You can be VIP in about 2 minutes. Go for it. pwtorchvipinfo.com. If you shop at Amazon, I have a request. When you shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. That sounds weird. How are you going to shop at Amazon if you don't go there? Well, don't go directly there. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go there, there's a giant Amazon logo. Click on it. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage where you were heading anyways, but that small detour tells Amazon, we sent you there. And when they get that message, they send us a commission on everything that you buy. So it's a great way to support us without having to do anything different other than when you shop at Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
So, Cam, who are you rooting for after what we saw in the main event tonight on SmackDown in the women's triple threat match at TLC on Sunday?
Still rooting for Becky. Like, whoever comes out of that, I think, is in a great position, but it's still Becky.
And do you, what do you think of the job that they did kind of setting the stage? I think the main thing they tried to do there was sell fans on the idea this is going to be exciting and intense, and they all kind of have reason to just beat each other up. And they also wanted to get Asuka across as being real intense and having a lot of fight that can match what Becky and Charlotte are bringing. And I thought there was a tinge of Charlotte going heel, you know, more of that where she seems kind of above everything, but not so overtly that it seems like fans are being manipulated into booing her. And I'm not even sure how I feel about it, but that's just sort of my take on the story that they were telling with those characters. And Becky's just sort of being the kid in the back of the classroom who doesn't really want to participate in what's going on, but is keeping an eye on everything and not kind of, I'm not sure how to describe it, but still kind of keeping that aura that has made her popular and not pandering.
I think a thing they did that was really well in the actual match with Charlotte and Asuka, they're, you know, pretty much dead even. Asuka going for so many submissions and Charlotte being the power wrestler to kind of find her way out of them time and time again, I thought was really good. And then when it looks like, you know, Charlotte's going to have to tap into her reserves because Asuka's right there with her, that's when Charlotte ends up taking the shortcut and just being done with it in a match that didn't really matter in standing. So just like you said, it's not like it's a clear heel turn. It's more frustration with the moment and her having other things on her mind. But I think it's great that, you know, not only do they have Asuka in there as the, you know, the third opponent, but she also stands tall at the end of this. So there's that idea, that inkling that regardless of her not being the primary part of this feud, she's still very dangerous to the both of them. So yeah, thought it was executed pretty well.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's introduce the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Tuesday, December 11th, 2018, following WWE SmackDown Live, their last chance on national cable to promote TLC. And I'm Wade Keller, host of the program, joined by Cameron Hawkins, who is part of PW Torch, including co-hosting the PW Torch East Coast cast. Cam, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. I do appreciate it.
Excellent. Let's give out the phone numbers and encourage people listening to us live here just past 9 o'clock Central, 7 Pacific. It's just past 7 o'clock in Vegas, so plenty of time for people who attended SmackDown to enjoy whatever it is people enjoy in Vegas late at night. There's a long list, and just past 10 on the East Coast. And we're taking your calls, 347-215-8558. You can find our live switchboard to stream the show at WadeKellerPostShow.com. So after Raw and SmackDown each week, go to WadeKellerPostShow.com, and that'll bring you to the live portion of our program where you can look up the phone number and give us a call. So 347-215-8558. If you want to be on the show and participate as a caller, be sure to push 1 on your keypad. That will light up your call, and we can then bring you on to the program. Cam, before we get to our first call, your thoughts on the latest version or the latest chapter in the new Daniel Bryan? Did you like his latest promo calling out fans for their unfettered consumerism and even calling out Mustafa Ali for daring to drive an SUV, which Ali had a pretty good comeback for why he does it. But anyway,
I thought it was good. I thought that, you know, it started off with Daniel Bryan having so much respect for Mustafa Ali that the fans didn't deserve to see those two go at it. I did think it was kind of a meta way of saying, you know, Ali, all these insane moves that you do, that was me at one point, and you see where it got me. Like, I had to adjust. But I think that just like on Raw, how they're saying things without saying things, they kind of did some of that. But no, I think that anytime they draw on something like Mustafa Ali carried Daniel Bryan's bags at an independent show, again, them saying without saying, Daniel Bryan, you made it possible for smaller guys like us to think that we could main event these shows. They didn't say numbers or size specifically, but that's what they alluded to. I like that they painted Daniel Bryan out as a pioneer and as a hero, but Daniel Bryan rejects that not only from fans, but from peers as well. I thought it was done really well.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think of the, an environmentalist or a busybody, Jake Barnett put it over on ProWrestling.net, telling that being kind of the central aspect of Bryan's heel act, that that Bryan is saying, you know, trying to take things that people say in an earnest way and turning up the volume enough that it becomes obnoxious. Does that angle work for you?
Wade, I'm the co-host of a show called The East Coast Cast. The host being Travis Bryant. Travis has some strong opinions about certain things that he tends to say yes. Very loud.
Yes.
He's often right about things, but I'm like, hey, but shut up. because again, tone and delivery matters a lot in your message. Yeah. And if those aren't received well, I think it's very heelish. Like, Daniel Bryan's not wrong in the things that he's saying, but it's how you approach the subject. You know, I spent a lot of time on Instagram, and you wouldn't believe how many different memes and ideas and quotes a vegan can post in a 24-hour period about why you should be vegan. It's pretty grating. And as I'm eating my hamburger, I'm like, you know what? You're right, but you're bothering me a little bit. So yeah, I do think it works, especially for somebody who spends a lot of time looking at information online, because a lot of things you see, whether you like them or not, you're getting hit over the head with them. So I do think it works.
Jay called Daniel Bryan a lunatic busybody who wants to arrest everyone without a composting toilet. I'm not sure he wants to arrest everybody. He just wants people to feel guilty for needlessly using plastic bottles and that kind of thing. But I get his point, and that's certainly what they're going for. They're trying to tap into the idea that people who point out things in the way that they do can come across as heels to a lot of people. Although I still think that undercurrent of Vince McMahon just getting tired of people telling him to stop flying a private jet and what the carbon footprint is when he does that, when he could fly first class and save the planet or whatever it is that somebody said to Vince to set him off. But it also very well could just be Daniel Bryan deciding to kind of have fun at his own expense too, knowing how sometimes his message is perceived because of how it is delivered, as you said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Styles cut a very straightforward promo, but I thought it was fine. I mean, sometimes shorter is better. And he just, you know, said there's only one AJ Styles, and he's going to show up Sunday and take his title back. And I thought that worked.
I like that he said basically, like, this is the authentic Daniel Bryan. Like, this is his real face. This isn't a new person. And so there's always that idea of the stuff that we don't see, that there was an undercurrent of him having this personality. Now it just came out. So I like that touch to it, too, noting that they're very familiar with each other and that AJ's not surprised by any of this.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead and start taking a couple calls here. And we will begin with 814. 814, thanks for calling. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hey, Ryan, go ahead. What have you got for us?
My question's on Lawrence Sullivan. He talked about a small tremor, the TLC pay-per-view. Could that be possibly interfering in the AJ Styles-Daniel Bryan match and costing AJ the match, leading Daniel Bryan picking up the victory?
People have speculated, I don't know, speculation, but suggested maybe a Lars Sullivan-Daniel Bryan alliance might be kind of good for Daniel Bryan to have, you know, a heel heavy backing him up. That dynamic has been utilized before. I don't know if Brian needs that. It might get in the way, but it might work. And so Lars could help Brian retain, and that would explain why he was able to win. Cam, your take on that or any other variation of it?
So I took his language to say, regardless of what happened to TLC, like that action, those matches, that event, that kind of pales in comparison to what I'm going to be when I arrive. That's how I took it. But I could definitely see him, you know, getting involved. I think for him, I could more see him being on the side of like a Dean Ambrose or a Baron Corbin and kind of existing in that space in Raw. But like my money's on him kind of showing up after, but I could definitely see him having an effect on a big main event match at that event.
What do you think of the way that they're hyping him up so much before he arrives? I mean, I think wrestling fans like that. I think they like anticipation being built up for something. And it's going to make whatever Lars does when he arrives newsworthy and a big deal. But they haven't given away, you know, it's like what Ryan is doing, you know, trying to read the tea leaves and speculate on it. I think it's a good approach to take for WWE. And I think fans end up as long as there's a good payoff for it, it means more having built up his arrival the way that they have been.
I think the biggest thing with him is he can talk without yelling at that size, which is unique. And so the way that they're presenting him, I feel like he comes in there, throws a guy around for a while, but then you put that microphone in front of him. I think that's when it gets good. So I don't think this is something that's going to fall flat because of his ability to talk. When the time comes, he's not just going to be another big guy. So yeah, I'm fine with it. I like the build.
Hey, if you're a fan of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which you obviously are if you're listening to this right now, check out Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a weekly show covering all the latest news in the world of wrestling, from WWE to Lucha Underground, New Japan, and everything in between, plus listener Q&A, rankings, and more. Check it out in iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or download directly from thesolomonster.com.
Ryan, anything else for us?
Yeah, my final question for you is, I thought the Cruiserweights were exclusive to Raw, and they had Ali wrestling in the main match tonight. Do you know, was there a storyline where some of those Cruiserweights got new to SmackDown, or did they just decide to do that all of a sudden?
Yeah, I think they decided to do it all of a sudden. Cam, do you know of anything that changed that?
No, I just think that's the way the wind blowed this time. I think that they saw a guy they could have a match with Daniel Bryan. I know they exist, you know, on the same show as far as if you go to the event live. I think it was convenience. And I don't think they, you know, with Leo Rush being a manager, with Drake Maverick being a manager on Raw, I think they just kind of exist in all spaces and aren't exclusive anymore at this point.
I think the statute of limitations ran out on that rule. It just sort of, you know, eventually it just what's the word for it when a law isn't enacted or enforced for so long and then it just becomes unenforceable. I kind of think that's what happened here. I mean, if it weren't the day after the person ringing the bell at ringside got to declare a winner in a TLC match with a referee down, which is to my best of my knowledge, never happened before. Only referees call for finishes of matches. If this weren't a company where Baron Corbin was blamed for Drake Maverick peeing his pants and peeing on Bobby Roode's jacket, you know, like, yes, that's a lot of people sucked and groaned, and that was, and it's part of Raw's ratings, reasons Raw ratings are down, perhaps, but it doesn't make any sense storyline-wise for Seth Rollins to blame Baron Corbin for that. That's way too meta, and it's meta with transference. I mean, Baron Corbin is a paid actor to be on the show, so it just breaks down on several levels. So, you know, you have that whole string of things. This does add to it. I think you bringing it up, Ryan, is indicative of fans want that detail work. And when you don't get it, the kind of the structure that guides everything starts to unravel, and then people get less invested in what's happening. So it would be nice. It would be nice to have Tom Phillips say 205 Live has a new working agreement that Paige has worked out, that 205 or SmackDown has worked out a working relationship with 205 Live. Paige has been hard at work to do that, and now 205 Live wrestlers will be part of SmackDown on occasion. I mean, they could have just said something like that, but the truth is you're watching a product run by a guy who doesn't think that stuff matters. So when you ask that question, Ryan, you know, there should be a good answer for it, and you're right to ask it. But Vince McMahon thinks that doesn't matter, and it's sort of death by a thousand cuts when you have an attitude like that, I would argue. Not you, but Vince. Anything else, Ryan?
Okay, thanks for... I'll let you know who these jobbers are. That's the only thing else I have for you.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I thought... The Shane Miz thing, I mean, it's sort of like... I can imagine the casual wrestling fan that you watch wrestling with might get a kick out of this, but I just don't get it. I don't think they can afford Miz to be involved in something that's just kind of as frivolous and light as and just playful, I guess, as the Shane storyline is, Cam. I don't really – I mean, it's I guess it's going somewhere, and we'll see what the payoff is, but the genesis of it is Shane doing something that fans booed him heavily for, that he and WWE seemed oblivious to how it would come across, and now – you have Miz acting in a way that seems suspicious but earnest at the same time. Or like, he seems earnest, but it doesn't really make sense why he'd feel that way. So you're suspicious, but you're also sort of rooting for Shane to go along with Miz because he seems so nice about it. And I just don't think any feelings come out of the TV time that they're investing in this. And I don't have faith that there's a good payoff. And in the process, we have to see Shane McMahon be hideous in the ring, pretending to be a wrestler. And so I'm really not sure what anyone is gaining out of this.
Imagine you graduate high school. Your dream is to be a wrestler. You go town to town, city to city, make $50 a match. You do all your own booking through Twitter and Instagram, whatever else you can find. WWE comes to town and they call you in. And all that training you did, you have to try to sell a punch from Shane McMahon.
Yes.
Like, I finally found the thing worse than Shane McMahon punches. It's Shane McMahon attempted submissions. He's horrible. And it's not even just that he's horrible. He's out of practice because he's not a wrestler. And to watch Miz pine for Shane McMahon's attention when there's no reason for us to believe, even though his last name is definitely McMahon, but Shane doesn't wield a certain amount of power or influence. There's no clout or glow that's involved with being involved with Shane. And I don't understand what Miz is doing. You know, we asked people in a poll how excited they'd be for a face Miz versus a heel Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. And with like 250 votes, it was almost split down the middle. So there are people who want to see that match, but this is not helping anybody get anywhere close to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sort of just observing it and trying to not prejudge too much if there is a payoff to it. But I think they could do something better with Miz at a higher level on the card than where this seems to be right now. And I know Miz is sort of, like, you know, the idea is he can lose and it doesn't matter. He'll just talk his way back into relevance, and he's able to sports entertain us with his sports entertainer persona. And it's like he's sort of in on the joke, and we're not supposed to take it seriously. And I just don't know that they have enough depth to dumb down the Miz character to that degree. It seems like he's happy collecting his paycheck, doing fun things. sort of like New Day, and I think there's too much of that on the product right now. And I mean, it's not that everybody has to be like super serious and all that, but like Miz, just his character just seems so soft around the edges. It's in the ring, he's sort of like the smooth jazz of wrestling. There's just no edge to his character. And now he's out here just goofing. He's just a goof with Shane McMahon. Again, if there's some payday down the road and it leads to kind of a sharp turn, that's where I'm sort of holding out being too critical of it. But in the, like I said, in the meantime, we got to watch Shane McMahon just be brutal in the ring. And it just the idea of some privileged son of the promoter going out there and embarrassing himself like he does when he's in that ring. And the use of him, I think, is, you know, Corey Graves said the mystique is off of Ronda Rousey a little bit, you know, and he meant it in kind of a storyline way that wrestlers are starting to see what she's like in the ring, which is still an ill-advised thing to say. But this stuff, the mystique's off Shane. I mean, the idea that he's a special attraction and that they should be building around his match at WrestleMania seems nothing more than an excuse to add a WrestleMania payday to the McMahons, an excuse to give Shane a payday, because I just don't think the demand is there at this point.
It's not. He's not any good. Yeah. Like, he's done cool things for the crowds to see. But like, the thing about Miz has always been he was able to speak truth to power. And when he doesn't have that, and he also, you know, Miz is not a crisp, hard-hitting guy in the ring. It's got to be one or the other. Like, you got to be able to do one of those things. And he was so good at the truth to power thing that now that he's not doing that and we don't really see an end game, it's not fun to watch.
Yeah. All right, our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad if you want to join us in our final minutes here, taking calls before we go to our on-site correspondent from Vegas. We'll go to 615 next. 615, thanks for holding. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade and Cameron. This is Kenny from Tennessee.
Hey, Kenny. Thanks for calling. Well, what do you think of SmackDown?
You know what? I really liked the show tonight, even though I feel like it kind of fell flat as far as the build-up from TLC. But I'll tell you what, you know, the opening with the kind of voice of God narration giving you what the show was about, it really kind of had that UFC feel to it. And I really wish they would do that more for SmackDown. And, hey, who knows if they can do it for Nitro 2.0 Raw. You know, it might actually make Raw a better show from a ratings perspective. What do you guys think about that opening Voice of God intro tonight?
Yeah, we haven't talked about it yet, but I loved it. I mean, I'd like to see that. To me, if you opened up every show with that and got rid of GMs announcing matches, you give gravitas to the matches, you give a backstory to them, you make it seem like somebody thought about what matches to have on the show before wrestlers started arguing and you made it up on the spot mid-show. I think it'd be a good new direction to go in terms of framing things and making them seem important. I mean, we heard from Mustafa Ali say what this meant to him. We felt invested. We talked about this for years. You know, UFC, you can just turn on UFC and or Bellator, you know, MMA fights, and you can watch the two fighters give a soundbite promo and the announcer talk about what's at stake in this match. And by the time they start fighting, you know what's at stake and you care about the fight. And WWE doesn't do that enough. And this was a case, an example of doing it. I thought it was really well done. Yeah, I mean, I'd like more of that, please.
Hey guys, I don't mean to tear you away from more amazing content that Wade Keller is putting out like he does every single week, but I need to tell you about my podcast. It's Sam Roberts, The Last Professional Broadcaster, and every Thursday morning I bring to you Not Sam Wrestling. The biggest names in the world of professional wrestling are on Not Sam Wrestling, whether it's WWE superstars like Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, Seth Rollins, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, NXT superstars like Shayna Baszler in the Undisputed Era, independent stars like Joey Janela, promoters like Court Bauer. The voices that you want to hear from this world of wrestling are on Not Sam Wrestling. Plus, every week, we break down everything that's going on in this world with the State of Wrestling segment, which Wade Keller has joined me on more than a few times. Hey, you can get the podcast every single Thursday morning. YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, notsam.com, and you can go the extra mile. There's bonus shows, there's videos, and it's all available at patreon.com/notsamwrestling. However you want to get it, get it. It's Not Sam Wrestling. And now, back to our buddy Wade.
Mm-hmm.
I've always hated the lie of college football and pro football that is the hour or half hour pre-show that kind of builds up to the game that you're about to see. It's like, I know I can read. I see who's been winning. I can see the stats. But what I do love is on like an hour long drama, like an hour long action show previously on. And then they tell you what you need to know from the last week or the last month as a part of the show. So I also loved it. Like I love knowing what the stakes are. I love knowing what the pieces are on the table and us building from there as a part of the show. So yeah, I think they should do that more often. I think you should treat your audience like, and it's not like they don't know it, you should treat your audience like maybe they were doing something different last week instead of watching your show, and keep them up to speed on it and make them want to be invested in it. So yeah, I'm also a fan.
And you can really get people excited about something that they weren't necessarily excited about with just state-of-the-art production values. I mean, there's a way to really edit together a string of clips and sound bites and narration and the use of language. I mean, TNA did it for years, and sometimes it was a little too over the top in terms of the James Earl Jones sounding guy with the superlatives. But it if you have wrestlers that people care about and a structure and titles that they're fighting for and within, It that kind of thing can make you feel like I'm about to watch something important. And, you know, I mean, Monday Night Football and Sunday Night Football, they really try to do that. If you tune in before the game and there's that music and they talk about and they the camera angles and they show the team colors and they talk about the record and what's at stake, in 30 or 40 seconds, you can be like, I'm not moving for 3 hours. I'm going to see what happens here. So WWE doesn't do enough of that. And there's no good reason not to. And they have shown over the years they are capable of it. But the fact is they're playing. They are putting on TV shows like an NHL team with a 5-1 lead with 12 minutes left in the game. I mean, they're just playing prevent defense and kind of phoning it in at this point. And it's not it's not them at their best. And they're paying a price in the ratings. I mean, Raw, almost third hour of Raw was 700,000 viewers less than it was 3 months earlier on September 10th. Regular viewers are peeling away by the week at a rate that is alarming and demands rethinking everything and trying new ideas and doing what Vince McMahon was doing when his back was against the wall, because WCW. With a young, brash, full of ideas, Eric Bischoff just swung for the fences with a budget and ideas and a vision and a new look and a new approach for wrestling, and it grabbed people's attention. And then Vince McMahon just was the paddles were on the chest, and he popped up off the deathbed and said, "Let's go get him." And the Attitude Era was born, and he was open minded to Stone Cold Steve Austin, and allowed people with ideas that were different than his, including Vince Russo, to have a say so in changing the direction of things. And fans took notice, and the rest is history. He doesn't have that competition right now, and there's complacency, and they are acting fat and happy because they have these big TV deals coming up next fall. But the fans aren't paying a price. The fans are turning off in big numbers. So little things like putting some more effort into the video before at the beginning of a show is not only effective at getting fans excited about the match, but it sends a message. We're not just phoning it in. Like every 2 hours or 3 hours of TV time that we have we treat it as precious. We treat it as a big deal. This is exciting to us to bring this to you. And having this robotic Tom Phillips talking like he's reading a manual on a washing machine when he talks about wrestling matches and things. It's like, will Lars Sullivan show up on Raw or SmackDown? None of us can wait to find out. And it's like, no, you're not human. You know, it's like it drives me nuts. There's nobody excited about being there and doing what they do. They're just filling 2 hours of TV time to make money because they're not there to serve the fans, or they're there to serve Wall Street. And it comes across that way. And fans, whether they're thinking about it overtly or they're just less inspired to tune in, they're paying a big price. And I didn't think this show was better. And I know that they're now, you know, they got TLC on Sunday, one more show, and then they're into Christmas and New Year. So they're not going to blow things up in a big way. But I don't know in the next 3-4 weeks how much more they're going to lose and what kind of hole they're going to be digging themselves out of. Or climbing out of, I guess, a better way to put it, when things start up again in Royal Rumble season. So there's my state of WWE rant, Ken.
I was like, I hope you don't expect me to say more words. There's really nothing to put on that.
All right.
It's like, yeah.
So Kenny, anything else you want to add? Anything you disagree with that I said there, or any other topics? Whatever. Take it away.
Oh, you just kind of summed up a lot of the things that I think a lot of the fans kind of feel like. You know, sometimes it's night and day when I watch, you know, not just Raw, SmackDown, but NXT as well. It's amazing how different all of these shows are. There's just so much content there. But I want to kind of end this because I know you probably got to get into your on-site correspondent. Finn Balor, you know, he got injured during the South American tour, and you know, it looks like he's not going to show up for the TLC event. What do you think is his future as far as, you know, I would like to see them hold him back and then he just shows up at the Royal Rumble. And I can't see him possibly win the Royal Rumble. But, you know, if I have a gut feeling that Daniel Bryan's going to win on Sunday. Do you think it's possible that we might see a program like a dream matchup? I hate to say that word with Finn Balor and Daniel Bryan. I know that I would like to see it, and I know a lot of fans would like to see it, but do you think that that would be a good excuse to get Finn Balor on SmackDown? Because he's just getting, it's hard to say what to say where he's at on Raw, but I can tell you with the way things are set up on SmackDown, he'd be so awesome on there at this point. And I think even he said, hey, you know, maybe it's time for me to go to SmackDown Live. But do you think that would be a possibility we'll see in 2019?
Yeah. Go ahead, Ken. Sorry.
No, that's just sort of my, I'll just say that's sort of like my Christmas wish that I hope the WWE would give me and all the wrestling fans, but I don't know if they'll deliver on that. But that's all I have to say on that.
Cool. Thanks, Kenny. Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a happy medium between no trades, between superstar shakeups, and doing so many that the superstar shakeup doesn't really feel like a big deal after WrestleMania. And Finn Balor seems like somebody who would have benefited from a trade at some point. So I think if you had two strategic trades per year on average, and aimed for no more than that, you know, three in an emergency. But when you have Braun Strowman out with an elbow injury and you have Roman Reigns on indefinite leave with cancer, it's kind of a good time to kind of shake things up a little bit and reassess, you know, and it makes sense too. That's when trades happen. When a starting quarterback goes down, that's when the GMs on NFL teams call around to look for the best backup who can maybe come in and salvage your season. I think that's a good kind of sports-like excuse to have the GMs call each other and orchestrate a trade because there's some gaps on the depth chart where two guys can benefit. So I'd like to see more of that. I think it's a little too late. I don't know. I mean, what do you think, Cam? Is it too late to move Finn over and tell a storyline that leads to maybe Finn and Bryan at WrestleMania? I assume they have other things in mind for Bryan, but who knows?
So we ran a poll. I like when this happens.
Yes.
We ran a poll on the 5th. And what I asked was, you know, Finn Balor is one of the focal points of Monday Night Raw this week, being Monday of last week. And I asked what his 2019 trajectory was. 15% said world champion, 29% said mid-card, and 53% said upper mid-card. And I always take that to mean challenging maybe for the title, but hovering around in that range. So most people feel like he's close. I do think that after TLC, a Balor for AJ trade straight up, I don't think anybody complains. Like, I really don't. SmackDown is absolutely the house that AJ Styles built with his match quality. But if AJ Styles isn't champion, what else is there for him to do on SmackDown? Unless he wins the title back from Bryan. So I don't think it's too late. I don't know about a Balor-Daniel-Bryan matchup as early as WrestleMania. But in 2019, can I see him, you know, competing for the WWE title on SmackDown and maybe winning it? Absolutely. That's where I fall. I think that, you know, them doing so much with him on Raw before he got hurt, him kind of being the driving force to get one up on Baron Corbin is good for him. I don't know if that means he's world champion or if he's Jericho that time he kind of beat Triple H for the world title and had to give it right back. So it's hard to say. Where he is right now in the immediacy, I'd say he's not quite there. But later in 2019, like SummerSlam, I could definitely see him there.
I I think I hear some suffering in the background.
I got a new puppy yesterday. Aww. He's going through it, but he's okay.
He just wants attention. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll cut to our commercial break, and you go give him a little love so that when we talk to our on-site correspondent, he doesn't feel so neglected, Cam.
Absolutely.
Yes. All right. So if you've got more you want to contribute to the show, do it by email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's also the email to use if you want to be an on-site correspondent for future episodes of Raw and SmackDown, including the pre-taped ones coming up for the Christmas and New Year's week shows, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Thanks to our callers, and if you got more to say about anything we've said so far or other topics like the wrap-off, the rap battle, battle rap, whatever it was called, send it to wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We're going to talk to our on-site correspondent next, so stay tuned, everybody. All right, we're back with our on-site correspondent, Plotkin. Are you from Las Vegas or visiting Las Vegas?
I'm from New York. I just moved to Las Vegas a few months ago.
Oh, cool. All right. Sounds good. And you also have a special guest who attended her first wrestling event 2 weeks after becoming a fan?
Yes, that is correct. A young lady named Chloe who
all his fault.
Just recently became a fan and said, "It's all my fault." Her text message last night said, "I'm so excited for tomorrow. My God, what have you done to me?"
That's great.
So, Chloe, what did you think of your first live wrestling experience? Did it live up to your anticipation?
It was awesome. I thought I was going to be really stranded without the commentary on the TV, but it was freaking awesome.
Very cool. All right, let's hit some of our usual questions, and then we'll get to some other things too. What'd you guys do?
You broke up a little bit, but was that the attendance question?
No, I didn't get to it because the siren's so loud, so we'll wait for the
oh, okay.
the noise
to oh
pass
yeah
it.
Sorry the well yeah, yeah the Vegas it's hard to find a quiet spot.
Can you tell all the police and ambulances you're doing a show and to just shut down for 10 minutes? All right. So talk about the attendance of the building. How full was the building tonight?
The attendance, if that building was 2/3 full, then I'm Vince McMahon. the entire top deck was blanketed off, and on the hard cam side was completely empty. From if the entrance is 12 o'clock, the hard cam side was completely empty from about 6:30 to 11.
Wow. All right. Did it seem like an energized crowd, or did it seem like this was, like a pre-dinner stop before the night really begins?
No, the crowd, even though small, was really energetic. There was never really a lull at any point during the show where the crowd seemed disengaged or where it was the obvious, popcorn break or bathroom break. I only one time during the show did I ever have to move because somebody was getting up to walk past me. Everybody was really into every segment.
What happened before SmackDown went on the air? If you got there soon enough to see the warm up match, or what? Yeah, or was go ahead. Or was it 205 live taped beforehand?
I got there just as I'm pretty sure it was Buddy Murphy or it might have been Mike Kanellis. I got there just as somebody with red hair was victorious. A villain, a heel with red hair. And then the 205 Live match was Cedric Alexander and Tony Nese. And okay. Cedric Alexander got a huge pop, as well as four Let's Go Cedric chants during the match.
Nice.
If Vince needs a face to fill in on Raw, based on the reaction in Vegas, Cedric Alexander's your man.
Cool.
And Cedric went over, and then Buddy Murphy came back out down the ramp to save the match on Sunday, and he charged the ring, and they brawled, and Cedric stood tall at the end, which, as we all know, means he's going to lose something.
Now, you've got a newbie fan with you. You can't be giving away all the all the secrets of how WWE's predictable booking gives away finishes.
Fair enough.
Yes. So how about what happened after SmackDown?
So after SmackDown, was Paige came out during one of the commercial breaks and announced that the dark match was going to be Rey Mysterio versus Randy Orton. It was right after that segment. She said, based on what just happened. So after SmackDown, first they had the mixed match challenge. Apollo Crews and Alicia Fox and Jinder went over on Bayley and Apollo Crews. And then we actually, the Rey Mysterio and Randy Orton kind of match honestly held no appeal to me. So we waited until the dance break in the Carmella R-Truth match on Mixed Match Challenge, and then we headed out.
All right, cool. Cam, do you want to kick off the discussion on SmackDown proper?
Sure. I'm curious about technically it's the third or fourth, but after you kind of made a definitive statement, what's the reaction to Daniel Bryan tonight? And not just when he comes out, but what's the reaction to things that he's saying? What are people around you saying, you know, as he talks? Like how do people feel about Daniel Bryan on, you know, Tuesday, December the 11th, inside the arena?
Inside, there wasn't much chatter amongst the people in my section, but when that music hits, it's like, it's almost Pavlovian. The crowd pops like crazy. Mm-hmm. And then every single moment, everything he did after that, it was boos. it's changed his music. They did it with Randy Orton years ago. When Orton turned heel, they changed it to his current music because it fit the vibe of the character. The Call of the Valkyries or whatever it is can't be Daniel Bryan anymore. People are too used to cheering.
Did the crowd rally behind Mustafa Ali, or did they kind of act like, who's this guy and why are we stuck with this no-name against Daniel Bryan?
No, the crowd got behind Mustafa Ali like crazy. I don't know if you guys could hear it on TV, but a number of times chants of SUV, SUV broke out.
Now, as long as no one's
different times when that happened.
As long as no one's chanting "factory farming, animal suffering," "factory farming, animal suffering," then I'll be okay with it. Or "plastic bottles in the ocean, plastic bottles in the ocean." Like I think this could go too far and backfire on Daniel Bryan a little bit more than he intended.
Yeah, and he even, what baffles me is right after he started off with the, you know, mass consumption heel rant. He made a legitimate heel point when he said, "You're all parasites. You leached onto me for the yes movement." That's a legitimate motivation for him to go heel. And, you know, like you and everybody else has been saying, in today's climate, you don't want your villain to be a guy who's preaching against, you know, eco-conservation.
Yeah, I think obviously what they're going – well, I shouldn't say obviously, but I think what they're going for is it's not the message, it's the tone of the message that's heelish. But I do wonder if people are going to be a little torn when they're sort of nodding along to what can amount to a Beto speech. You know, let's cut back on things that are destroying our environment.
Well, I mean, you just had an entire crowd chanting SUV, SUV,
right.
Which means there's probably a bunch of five-year-olds who, you know, in 11 years know exactly what kind of car they're going to get.
And it is Vegas. And you've had to have learned in this time that Vegas is full of degenerates. I mean,
dear God, I saw it coming from New York, but this is a whole nother level.
I was kidding, but okay, yeah, all right. Well, you know, you got to live with them.
No, I was joking. Yeah.
sure.
But yeah.
All right, cool. Well, talk about the reaction to Becky Lynch, Charlotte, and Asuka, and how in terms of coming out to the ring, and then also as the match progressed and the post-match angle.
Asuka got the biggest pop. Honestly, Asuka's top three of the night almost sounded bigger than Becky's. Charlotte, I wish she would get the heel heat that her character deserves, but she still, I feel like that woo legacy will keep her vaguely safe forever. The crowd was behind her. But everybody was really getting behind Asuka when she got vicious there towards the end. Chance of Becky broke out about twice during the match whenever the screen would show her sitting there. And everybody, as far as the post-match brawl, First of all, it looks like Charlotte needs to take a class on how to swing a kendo stick. But the crowd was, when each of the women had their moment, the crowd was behind each of them. It didn't seem like there was a clear favorite. Asuka definitely was.
Was Becky the night, so. Describe like what your expectation was for? When did you buy tickets for this event? Let's throw that out there first.
I actually bought them probably about 2 hours before it started.
Yeah, that's what I thought you told me.
I knew I was going to go, but I assumed it wasn't going to sell out.
Yeah.
Just based on knowing how the business is doing right now.
Right.
But we, you know, all in with fees, it was, you know, $40 a ticket for the lower bowl. But it was funny because when I went on the T-Mobile website just 2 days ago, the advertised match was an 8-man tag with Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy and Rey Mysterio against Samoa Joe, Randy Orton, The Miz, and Shinsuke Nakamura. So they didn't update their site in a while.
Do you think fans paid to see SmackDown, or did you get a sense they paid to see Becky, or who kind of came across as the big draw, and who fans were there to see based on crowd reactions?
Based on crowd reactions, everybody was there to celebrate Rusev Day.
There we go.
He might have legitimately gotten the biggest pop of the night.
Wow.
At least from what it sounded like inside the arena. He was over like Rover. But I'd say everybody seemed there to experience SmackDown. I didn't see a lot of any one particular t-shirt. The merch selection was, it's almost as if, well, the merch selection matched the attendance numbers. There's maybe about seven t-shirts up for sale. Sting mask, if you still want one.
They must have found a bunch of boxes of Sting masks a few months ago and said, oh, crap, let's try to sell these at these events.
There's a Sting mask. There was the AJ Styles shirt he was wearing in his on-screen promo. There was like a John Cena shirt.
The crowd react to the a rap battle with The Bar and New Day and the Usos. Were they into that start to finish?
Yeah, the crowd loved the rap battle. That held everyone's attention. There wasn't any point that I could tell that I felt the crowd turning on it. Not to mention, I don't know whether it was Jimmy or Jay who made the Ninja Turtles reference to Sheamus, which was brilliant.
They're very good at the characters they're playing, because battle raps, the way Sheamus and Cesaro were battle rapping is what people think battle rap is, and what the Usos were doing is actually the art form today. And that's why Road Warrior Animal saying he wished they played quote-unquote Samoans is so annoying, because the Usos are so contemporary and so into what they're playing and so authentic with it that it's amazing.
But wait, if you're a white person of European descent and you're from some other part of the world, and you're on sports entertainment programming, you need to play a character based on that part of the world that you or your family came from that is not white European, right? That's the rule. I mean, Cam, come on.
Absolutely. That's why Sheamus and Becky actually dig into a pot of gold before they come out for every match. Make sure they got the right coin, and then they make their entrance. No, I did feel like the crowd was really into that. My question is this, concerning the Usos, I guess. How much, since day one, merchandise did you see in the crowd, you know, if at all? Is that still kind of out there like that?
It's not. I saw some Undisputed Era shirts. I didn't notice any Uso apparel, but they were still over. And I love the dynamic between the Usos and the New Day.
It's great. Yeah.
It's so great. And I have to say, as a major fan, the fact that Xavier Woods was decked out in all orange tonight made me very happy.
Very good. What kind of response did Best in the World Shane McMahon get, and how did fans react to his I can't quite get the word out, but it's what the W stands for in World Blank Entertainment. I can't really associate that word with what Shane did, but whatever
Shane
was.
Shane was throwing bunches of punches. How dare you disrespect?
How bad did they look? Not to jump in, but they looked that bad on TV. How bad did they look in person?
It's garbage. It was so terrible. Half of them weren't literally were not landing at all. They were just swipes.
Just total guess. Do you think the fans, like the average fan, is noticing that and going, ugh, or
no.
Are they just like, ah, Shane, best in the world, he's a McMahon, woohoo, and they're excited that he's there?
It would be the latter.
Yeah.
The storyline and the gimmick itself is over. People love the dynamic. The people in the arena love, you know, Miz treating the trophy like it's Monroe Sky. people were just, oh my God, it's Shane McMahon. I didn't hear anybody complaining about the punches.
So there wasn't a big groan when he leaped over his opponent and just plopped on the ground and everything stopped for a few seconds?
Oh my God, the number of botched spots. There was in the Tony Nese, in the 205 Live match, there was a terrible botched spot, that like a springboard Samoan drop face plant. There were two botched spots in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Cam. Anything else you want to ask?
I really think that's about it. I know you say you weren't super into the Rey Mysterio, Randy Orton stuff. Did you get a sense from the crowd, maybe excluding the main event, did you get a sense from the crowd what matches they were excited about at TLC?
Yeah, everybody's excited for the Seth and Dean match. The Rey and Randy match got a decent pop that was significantly more from the Roman Reigns loving demographic. I think that some people feel the way that I feel. Like Rey Mysterio to me is he's a legend at this point. He does three moves. There was almost no reaction when the Braun Strowman Baron Corbin graphic flashed. There was almost no reaction from the crowd. But people are excited about the women's triple threat match. Yeah. I think that's going to – and people are excited to see AJ and Daniel.
Can I get Chloe back in the conversation for a moment?
Hi.
Hey, so just kind of tell us what your impression was of things. What stood out to you? What are you going to remember, you know, 3 weeks and 3 months from now about the show, and what was different than maybe your expectations or surprised you about what it was like in the building?
One of the things that was super big I used to is that they're actually jumping from that high. I think if you haven't seen it real, they're tiny on TV and you can't really make sense of it. So it's fun to see live, you know, how much ground they're actually clearing. I mean, it's a big difference to see it right in front of you and see it on a tiny box.
Yeah. Did you after watching wrestling for such a short time, what appeals to you about it?
I didn't get it. I didn't get anything about it. And I also come from sort of the MMA jiu-jitsu side of things. And I didn't know how to get my head around what pro wrestling was. I think it's really fascinating for me coming from the sports side to see real athletes doing real moves as entertainment. Because it's not, you know, if you're on the side of people that don't appreciate wrestling or don't appreciate wrestling yet, it's like, okay, it's fake. It's the first thing everybody says. But being able to see and sort of understand how much artistry goes into making a real thing work as entertainment has been really cool for me.
And Wade, to jump in with that, like to me as somebody who is a fan of both, somebody like Oscar would be kind of my bridge if I were trying to get people who weren't into it into it. Did you see anybody, like maybe her, maybe somebody outside of her, who you think you could take to an MMA kickboxing fan and say, okay, I know you don't like wrestling, but this person is somebody you'd enjoy. Did anybody jump out like that?
I feel like my reaction to characters is so instinctive in the moment. I like them or I don't, which is probably also how I do my life. But, you know, so at that point, I'm not, you know, falling in love with a character because of talent or skill. It's, you know, now I'm just stuck in the story. At the same time, you know, I probably have on and off reactions to people depending on how they do perform, especially if it's something I'm more familiar with, like noticing there are a lot of people that really are submission grapplers. Like, these are things that I recognize. These are not just, you know, random out of the blue, which is also pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. Well, hey, I appreciate both you guys taking time to talk to us after the show tonight. Anything else you want to add, either of you, to the segment before we wrap up?
I just have a question, and maybe this requires a longer answer than we have time for. But I'm just curious as to your thoughts on why wrestling seems to be the one scripted form of entertainment where the people who aren't fans of it, who don't understand it, assumed that the intellect of the people who watch it hasn't progressed. Versus if I said I watched The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, you wouldn't think I'm a moron.
No,
you'd
I would
say, oh, he likes bad TV.
You chose the wrong show.
Fair enough.
I think
touché, salesman.
No, there's a long that is a long answer, and there's some inertia from when it was a con. And you know, they were trying to portray scripted fights as legit, and then you've just there's it is. I mean, Cam, it is a long topic to get into.
And I would say, and this is not at all a scientific answer, but it's Santa Claus in the sense that when you were the kid who found out it wasn't real, you were heartbroken, but in order to kind of save some face and make yourself feel better, you went around telling the other kids wasn't real too. I think people get a joy out of acknowledging that wrestling is a quote unquote fake thing when they're aware that people know a lot of things aren't real, but it's at one point something they either held dear or enjoyed and felt a little bit insulted and embarrassed. And so in order to kind of make sure they're not the only one feeling that, they feel the need to pass that around.
Yeah. Okay. I can. We could probably have a 20-minute discussion on it, but send it in for maybe the flagship, and we'll explore that in more detail.
Absolutely, and thank you very much, long time listener, first time caller. So thank you for this is quite an honor, sir.
Very, very. We really appreciate your time, and thanks for your kind words. Plotkin and Coey, thank you.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
You all take care.
All right, we are back. It is almost time to get to the mailbag. But first, Cam, tell people how they can hear more from you throughout the week. And tell them how they can listen to you.
So, you can find me on the Pro Wrestling Torch East Coast cast, hosted by Travis Bryant, co-hosted by myself and Rich Fan. It's going to be every Wednesday at 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central. You can find that by going to eastcoastcast.com. It's on the Blog Talk Radio site. You can subscribe to that show on iTunes. And it's Travis, Rich, and myself covering the week in wrestling every week with live phone calls and emails and voicemails. And actually, Wade, I feel confident saying it. This week is going to be the return of my VIP show, Union Yay. Wrestling. Where I interview, one longtime fan of wrestling about their favorite time or favorite moments in wrestling, how they compare them to wrestling today. So
is it going
to
be Chloe?
It's not going to be Chloe.
But can you get an hour out of somebody who's watched wrestling for 2 weeks?
That would be that would be amazing. So, who are your favorite managers from your favorite time watching? Well, there's Leo Rush,
and Drake Maverick.
Drake Maverick, exactly. That's the extent.
What's your earliest memory? Oh, that Drake Maverick peeing on Bobby Roode's robe.
Oh my goodness! Somebody's going to throw their phone. You, Me, and Wrestling will be back this weekend. It's going to be a special episode of the South Congress podcast, which I record every week covering the goings-on in pop culture and sports and music. It's special because we'll be recording it on my birthday, my 33rd birthday. So that's going to be fun. South Congress podcast with a K, that's on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you listen to podcasts. So,
South Congress with a K. You got to say that.
South Congress with a K, exactly. And then one more thing, because I don't think I'll be back on before this happens, but I've been planning out a really special kind of best of WWE show between myself, Travis, and some other friends. So that's going to be available at the end of the month. I'll say more about that when it comes to fruition. But yeah, a lot of cool things in the fire right now.
Social media.
You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Seahawk. It's C-E-E-H-A-W-K. You can actually follow The Torch now on Instagram. It's at PW Torch. Typically, I'm going to be giving you updates on all our VIP shows, all of the call-in shows that we do, like the post show I'm doing with Wade right now. We have some cool wrestling trivia, some wrestling pictures from yesteryear that Bruce provides. So it's PW Torch on Instagram. And yeah, if you follow me, you'll just see great pictures of my new cute puppy. That's what's going on right now.
What's your puppy's name?
His name is Banner, after Bruce Banner. He's a great little terrier mix. He's fantastic.
All right, let's go to the mailbag. And we'll begin with Patrick from Orlando. He says, I didn't see a single rapid zoom in out during that match. It also seemed to use ringside cams much more than the hard cam. And even the hard cam was moving with the action. And Daniel Bryan didn't even preach to the hard cam. Is this a glimpse of the future? Did you notice production changes there, Cam, during that match?
I noticed more of that during the main event, as a matter of fact, as far as how they were shooting it. I think it's like you said, Wade, during the call-in show. I think they're trying new techniques because they have to draw more eyes to the show. I did notice some different angles, mostly during the main event, by showing kind of the ringside cam. There was a lot of camera work kind of from outside of the ring and over the wrestlers. It was really interesting, but it was a bit different, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, before I forget, I want to remind people, you can send questions for the flagship this week. I meant to do that right after your plugs for your shows on social media. But if you got questions on the flagship on WWE, TLC, New Japan, ROH's pay-per-view coming up this weekend, anything else in wrestling, Wade Keller podcast at PWTorch.com. Rich Fan joining me for this week's Thursday flagship. And then Friday, Matt McCarthy, ex-WWE creative team member and professional stand-up comedian, host of the We Watch Wrestling podcast, and you've probably seen him in commercials and not even known it. He will join me to preview TLC start to finish, and we'll get his take on the state of WWE. So tune in Friday for that. All right, well, let's go to another question about Brian and Ali. This is just some compliments on from Steve from Pittsburgh. I want to say how much I enjoyed the first segment and match. Brian is giving Becky a run for her money for being the most fun and interesting character to watch. I also loved how Mustafa Ali was his opponent tonight and wonder if Daniel Bryan had some say-so in that booking. Ali is super fun to watch, and this was the first time I ever watched the match during a commercial with no volume. It didn't look like the standard rest hold we were used to seeing. Cam, I was thinking, do they know they're at commercial break? Because this action looks way too exciting and intense and relevant to be on that tiny screen in the upper left.
I think that was also by design.
Yeah.
Like they wanted them to keep going so that eyes wouldn't jump during that commercial break that they had to take. It was hard hitting. It was fast. They let Mustafa Ali do a few things. Like every time Daniel Bryan takes a bat bump or a bump close to his shoulder blades, I get a little nervous. But yeah, there was a substantial amount of that. You'd love to see what those guys can do with half hour or 45 minutes uninterrupted. But it was very good, especially serving as the opening match for a SmackDown.
What do you think of SmackDown's difference? Like, how do you describe the difference between SmackDown and Raw in terms of the format and the presentation? Do they feel like they're the execution of different visions, or are the differences that we notice on a week like this not particularly all that important? Like, we can say, well, that's, it's nice, it's an improvement, or it's fresh, but it's not really a significant difference maker in terms of who is going to tune in and tune out of the show. Are they different enough? Are they different in significant ways? And what are the key differences?
Paige exists to advance storylines. Baron Corbin seems to exist to put dents in storylines. And to me, that's the biggest thing. Like, it just runs smoother. I have every reason to believe that Daniel Bryan is the one in charge of SmackDown. As champion, kind of what he says goes, even if he's not, you know, in every single person's face. Like, he kind of sets the tone with what he does. You know, on Raw, I would say Seth Rollins would be the de facto champion of Raw, just, you know, based on who's there and who's not. And he doesn't seem to necessarily be in control of what's going on. The onus is on management, not on the talent. And SmackDown seems a lot more talent driven. And it's just, it's more talent driven. It's shorter. You kind of know where everybody stands and what their roles are. It's just a smoother show that doesn't require as much to be invested into it.
And one show's 3 hours and one is two. Mm-hmm. they rotate on SmackDown. They rotate talent. So there's a lot of wrestlers you just don't see all that often or every week in significant segments, kind of like NXT is that way too. And that can make the appearances by wrestlers fresher, where Raw, it seems like they try to fit anybody who's actually in the rotation on the show. And part of that is because it's 3 hours. Mm-hmm. They're not using 205 Live talent anymore. But SmackDown does seem to be a little more patient and drive home a couple big things per show. And then other stuff, you know, like Randy and Ray. It was an angle. It was fine. But there wasn't a lot to it. Where with Raw, Randy might have been scripted to talk for 8 minutes, and the thing with Ray would have taken longer. And it just sometimes part of it is just 2 hours is a better format for a show than three.
Wade, with, you know, Dynamite Kid passing and, you know, everybody's talk from you and Bruce, me and Travis, just about how, you know, he fathered so many of these guys' styles, how your favorite wrestler is probably some type of descendant from his tree style-wise. You know, as somebody who just, you know, grew up, you know, I was 11 in 1996 watching Rey Mysterio and Dean Malenko and Ultimo Dragon and Psychosis, Juventud Guerrero just have these amazing matches. Watching Rey Mysterio in 2018 when there's a Mustafa Ali in 2018, it just does not translate. Like, it's just, you just see the gap in talent and style. And, you know, you see the miles on Rey Mysterio. So I'm not sure, like our caller said, there is our on-site correspondent. They seem to be invested in Randy Orton and Rey Mysterio as a crowd. Like, that's a match that they want to see. But boy, it is just watching Rey Mysterio in 2018, it is just not the same. And I just don't know how exciting of a match those guys can have when they were both big time on SmackDown 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. No, good point. Good point. All right, we'll go to Zach in Texas. If it weren't a sure thing before the fact that she was the last woman with the Singapore cane in her hand, Asuka's definitely not winning the TLC match on Sunday, right? Also, I know you'd probably rather Vikings play like they did last night than see Shane McMahon in the ring. Ooh, that's a tough call. But I found his segment with The Miz entertaining. He does a good job of playing the straight man to Miz in his delusional behavior. They even justified him wrestling tonight by having Miz force him into the match and then jumped from behind. Shout out to Tom Phillips for questioning the whole thing, by the way. It was silly but fun. Anyone without having to do a coast-to-coast. Oh, God, yeah. I mean, silly but fun is what Miz and Shane is. And I think I would be more okay with it, I guess, if Shane wasn't so god-awful in the ring. And if I didn't think Miz should be treated more seriously because they need him. They need him to be a more significant player. I think he's a legacy guy who's defining himself down into Santino territory right now in terms of his role and his value. And so something can, I was like, Kurt Angle was fun and silly, and he should have been a big money drawing main event megastar. But they played into, well, he can be fun and silly and fill TV time with sports entertainment segments. And as good of a career as Kurt Angle had, it could have been way more significant, and fans look back at on it in a different way at a higher level. And okay, I just compared Miz to Kurt Angle, so peel yourself off the floor. But you know what I'm saying is, like, I hope that Miz deserves, or that I think Miz is at a place where fans would accept him if he weren't kind of dumbing down his character into kind of slapstick silliness, zaniness, what DX became. That defined them down a little bit too. So that's my issue with it. Not that there isn't a fun chemistry between the two of them and that, you know, Shane isn't playing that. But like, I think writers and even and fans too sometimes think pro wrestling is like a good pro wrestling segment is, was I amused? If the fans were amused while watching, then Yay, round of applause, that worked. And to me, doing a segment where fans are amused by it is sometimes like not worthy of compliment, because that's a sign that you don't have your eye on the ball, which is trying to get people emotionally invested beyond passive amusement that just dissipates. Like bubbles being blown by a 3-year-old, you know, like in the garden. They just go poof and then they're done, and there's no lasting effect. Oh, I was amused by that, and it's too frivolous. And so to me, like, Shane McMahon is also being downgraded by exposing how awful he is, and these segments just don't feel significant enough for Miz. So that's where I'm coming from. It's not like I just think sometimes there's too much of a focus, and the writers get on this too, and the fans do. Well, if it was amusing to me and I laughed, yay, they succeeded. And I'm like, no, that's not that can work if it's Santino comedy relief when you're wrapping it with things that are significant, but you shouldn't be underutilizing people. And yeah, Shane and Miz, I think, are being underutilized, and amusement should not be the standard. Cam, your thoughts?
If there's been one constant with Miz since he broke up with Morrison way back when, it's that Miz doesn't play second to anybody. Even when he's in a tag team, like, Miz doesn't play second. And to see him play second to Shane McMahon, of all people, is just crazy. And then, yeah, Shane was just fine in the segment with the way he responded to Miz, which made it worse on Miz, because you have no idea why he's acting like that. You have no idea why he's evoking this specific emotion. And then again, you have to watch Shane McMahon attempt wrestling moves. So, like, to me, even though he was competent in it, everything else around him kind of fell flat, and we have no reason as to why. Like, they want to be a tag team so bad. Miz hasn't said a word about the New Day or the Usos or Cesaro and Sheamus. Like, be a team to be a team. Like, there's no – like, it's rudderless right now. It just exists to fill time, it seems, and it's not good.
All right, Cam, we will end on that note. I appreciate your time today co-hosting.
Wade, thank you for having me, as always.
And good luck with the puppy. I assume he is not anywhere close to trained yet.
No. He's been good about the things we've asked him to do, but no, it's gonna be a fun Christmas break.
Yes. All right. Cool. Thanks so much.
Take care.
You bet. All right. So again, if you got questions for the flagship, send them soon, because we'll be recording that on Wednesday afternoon. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. If you'd like to be an on-site correspondent for a future Raw or SmackDown, same email, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. If you attend a live wrestling event other than a Raw or SmackDown TV event, we welcome you. We invite you. We encourage you to send us a written report, who won, who lost, some details and notes on each of the matches, who was most over, notes on attendance, all the kind of stuff that we talk about here on the podcast. And we can publish that on our website, pwtorch.com. The email address for that, including results from any show, WWE, ROH, NXT, etc., please send to pwtorch@pwtorch.com. That's the catch-all email for news tips also. So if there's something newsworthy that might be worth our posting on the website and one of our news updates, or just having knowledge of to kind of utilize on our podcasting, that's pwtorch@pwtorch.com for results or news tips. Be sure you're checking out pwtorch.com every day. New content daily, including my TV reports on Raw and SmackDown. I'll be covering TLC live on Sunday. We'll have live ROH pay-per-view coverage this weekend too. And editorial, special features, flashbacks, and more. That's pwtorch.com. Same thing on the world of MMA. Check out our sister site, MMATorch.com. And for written recaps of pro wrestling personality-hosted podcasts, check out pwpodcasts.com. Whether you want to know what our reviewers had to say about a podcast you just listened to, or catch up on a podcast you know you're not going to have time to listen to, or pick out what you're going to listen to next, pwpodcasts.com is a great place to go for all of that. You can follow me on social media on Twitter at TheWadeKeller and at PWTorch, on Instagram, as Cam mentioned, at PWTorch, and on Facebook, facebook.com/PWTorch, and you can friend me at facebook.com/WadeKellerTorch. Thanks, everybody. Until the Thursday flagship on our blue logo feed, Just search Wade Keller and select the blue logo to subscribe to our shows that run later in the week, the Thursday Flagship and our Interview Friday and Mailbag shows. That's Wade Keller. And you're already subscribing because you're listening to this, to the red logo shows, the post shows, but also subscribe to the blue logo show so you don't miss out. And Rich Fant will be my guest co-host on tomorrow's show. That'll do it for me for today. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Cam. Thanks to our on-site correspondents, our callers, and our emailers. Until next time, Wade Keller signing off. Thank you for downloading the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget, you can get these shows with the ads and plugs and commercials all edited out on our special VIP audio feed with a VIP membership. That applies to all four shows that I host during the week, the Wade Keller Post Shows and podcasts later in the week, and also all seven PW Torch livecasts, plus all of our VIP exclusive shows throughout the month. There's about 100 of them. I host about 12 per week that are VIP exclusive. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, post pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, and the Fix with Todd Martin. We got a bunch of other great content. Check out full details at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Yes, all the VIP podcasts, including the ad-free versions of this show, are compatible with popular podcast apps on both iPhone and Android. You can also stream the shows right from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. So check out details if you want to support us and get these shows ad-free and a ton of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com for more details. We've got a mobile-friendly sign-up form. You can be VIP in about 2 minutes. Go for it. pwtorchvipinfo.com. If you shop at Amazon, I have a request. When you shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. That sounds weird. How are you going to shop at Amazon if you don't go there? Well, don't go directly there. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go there, there's a giant Amazon logo. Click on it. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage where you were heading anyways, but that small detour tells Amazon, we sent you there. And when they get that message, they send us a commission on everything that you buy. So it's a great way to support us without having to do anything different other than when you shop at Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support.